Hey, everybody, welcome back to the show. I'm your host, as always, Ben Thomas. You know, this time of year usually brings up a lot of different conversations, especially as we head into the summer months, especially here in my home state of Texas. Start talking about electrification. What does the power draw look like? How does that change based off of air conditioning needs and supply needs? And now we're building data centers. So the conversation is as relevant as it's ever been. And to have that conversation at scale today, I wanted to bring on a couple of folks who are far smarter than I am about it. And that's John and Jack from ABB. Gentlemen, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having us.
Well, look, I want to ask, right? I mean, a lot of folks in the industry obviously know ABB in name or practically are clients of yours. But I want to ask, Jack, we'll start with you. What are some of the things specifically that you get to work on at ABB? And what are some of the ways that, clients see the full realization of that?
No, but it's a great point. So we think about electrification of everything. It's kind of a buzzword, but it really means something to us at ABB. When we think about everyone plugging their phones into the house to an EV charger, we really think about how the grid is going to uphold this new demand coming on. And so we think about two things in my world specifically, grid hardening and grid resiliency. The thing about grid hardening is really the prevention. So, you know, we think about undergrounding power lines, making sure that the grid can withstand Mother Nature, if you will, right? So forest fires or tornadoes, hurricanes, and then you think about resiliency, the recovery of that grid. How quickly can we get back up and off the ground? And so ABB, electrification, these are the core parts of what we bring to our customers, is the ability to harden, help you harden the grid, whether it's solid electric switchgear or resiliency with fire mitigation products. I think these things allow us to, you know, meet the demands of our customers. But ultimately, there is a big need, and it's not going away anytime soon, where the grid just can't support the demand that's on it today.
Well, look, I puffed up Texas a second ago, but we're probably the largest culprit at this point about somebody who really needs grid hardening and resilience. And John, you also live in Texas. You get to live in the world of sort of the commercial utilities as well. You know, what are some of the challenges that you see, not only in Texas? We'll stop picking on the home state for a second, but what are some of the common challenges you're seeing right now as people are having these conversations, many of them either kind of for the first time or they're at the point where they need to rebuild their systems?
If you go back in history, utility market grew at about a 5.4% CAGR. You could always put your finger on it. But over the last 5 years, we've seen tremendous growth. And the next 10 or 15 years, that growth is going to outpace what we've seen historically. So the challenges are, how do utilities, how does the market be able to address that growth in a way that we can maintain resilience and reliability? You know, if you look at the state of Texas, you mentioned, so there's a lot of projections of when ERCOT out there, but, you know, realistically, we're looking at about 80 gigawatts of growth in the next 10 to 15 years. And to be able to do that, going from where just 2 years ago, the whole state of Texas was 80 gigawatts, is going to be a tremendous feat. So it's a lot of opportunity for growth, but also a lot of, you know, how do you plan for this? How do you address that growth?
Well, look, and Jack, you get to live on both sides of the business, right? The sort of the commercial side, which you would loop in data centers, commercial facilities, also the utility side. You know, a lot of folks that are sort of in our collective purviews don't always understand the needs, right? Because whether you're a data center who's generating your own power, trying to have your own off-grid presence, or that homeowner who doesn't realize that there's a reason your utility wants to give you free power after 9, you know, what are some of the strongest demands that are driving both of those simultaneously?
Yeah. Well, data center for sure, as you bring up, right? We look at the, you know, LLM models or generative AI, the need not just for power, but for cooling that power as well. So now you have even more demand to kind of cool the data centers than they've never seen before. But then also the grid's challenge because they can't support these clusters of data centers that are happening at the same time. And so now we start thinking about like microgrids or battery energy storage to start getting sustainability ideas in here. And how do we have a smarter, more efficient energy to the data center, let's say, but then the grid is also challenged. Utilities want a piece of that, and how do they get their element there? And so, you know, a big part of it starts with the transformer, then going into the switchgear, then going into the building. And then on my side of the business, we also get to see the greenfield come up and the actual infrastructure itself. So we participate in installation products part of that as well. So we install all the components to make data center work. And it's also an exciting part for us right there as well.
Well, you look at places like rural Virginia, here in Texas as well, where you see a lot of these data center clusters pop up, large manufacturing places like Austin as well, where the grid is sort of shared by both, right? The manufacturing, the data center, but also the residential side of things. How does that conversation start, right? I mean, you look at, I'll use Austin as an example. Tesla's got their own manufacturing plant there. Now Samsung's building their own manufacturing plant, which is driving their own subsidies. Are you seeing more commonalities where the residential side and the data center in large electrification side of things are starting to share some of the same assets?
Well, it's interesting because there's the grid does differentiate. So when the draw comes in, they don't care if it's a house or if it's a data center, right? But the infrastructure was never established to support this level of demand. And this is why utilities are trying to find creative ways for people to not come home at 5 o'clock and everyone plugs their EV in at the same time, right? Because the grid can't handle it. And then we talked earlier about the fact that it's the resiliency of it, like the recovery time can be forever, right? And so I think this is opportunities for companies like ABB to come in and help bring really good solutions and innovative products to their customers to help offset these challenges that face. But at the end of the day, the grid's infrastructure is so old in some cases that it's just it needs a lot of upgrading. And that's why customers feel and, you know, residents feel like, why does it take 3 days to get my power back on, right? Or you have a big storm and all your power lines are knocked down. Well, if they were underground, you wouldn't have had that issue, right? You would have had a hardened grid, and then your recovery would have been better as well.
Well, naturally, that brings up the conversation about distributed energy resources, right? Whether it's the data center who wants their own on-prem setup. But the challenge is, you get to live in this world, is the utility sort of wants a piece of that. You know, the grid, I would say, is collaborative in nature. So the utility always wants their piece of it. How do you see some of these distributed resources kind of intermingling with the demand for the utility, whether that's power sharing, whether it's, you know, profit sharing, things like that?
So what we're seeing is utilities are in now involved into generation sources historically they weren't involved in. So, you know, historically you had a large generation center that had transmission lines to a substation distributing the energy out to the consumer. Now what you have is isolating energy at the distribution level with the DERMS and the DERS. So what we see is utilities faced with generation sources that they haven't historically seen, which presents challenges around flexibility, challenges around how do we understand how to do two-way flow of power on the grid. So these are things that utilities are facing and they've never faced before. So it's pretty interesting.
That brings up the challenge of battery storage too, right? I remember we talked about that last year where, hey, it's great to have all these solar panels and all these, you know, distributed resources, but if you don't have a place to store them, you can't really dump that load, right? There's not a really good way to utilize that outside of storing it. I mean, do you see still that demand for the storage side of things picking up as much?
Absolutely, because if you look at renewable resources, you know, the wind only blows at a certain time, the sun only shines during the day. So you have to be able to distribute that power 24 hours a day. Without battery storage being part of that equation, it's going to be very difficult to meet those demands.
Well, Jack, that same conversation pops up in your world all the time, right? Whether it's the you know, the ESG requirements of a company or a corporation, there's some sure sub-level of sustainability, things that are happening like that. How does sort of the renewable side of things play practically into the world of whether it's data centers, whether it's facilities, whether it's manufacturing? Does it actually play in at scale, or is it sort of just a buzzword?
Well, I mean, sustainability is core to ABB's culture, right, across the world globally, but also here in North America. And so I believe that it does have a key role to play. I think solar is still one of the best sources of energy we can have. To John's point, battery energy storage, is where you're going to store all that piece of it there. And also, I think some of these data centers are looking at ways of how do I capture and sustain myself in these spaces or these more rural areas going on. I don't know if wind onshore, like onshore wind, is as prevalent maybe, but offshore wind for sure has been a big deal. But for sure, I think renewable energy is going to be the future. We have to be able to harness Mother Nature, right? And the more we can do that, the better and more sustainable we'll be able to bring energy to the grid. So,
well, it's interesting because that sort of brings up its own subset of challenges, right? We're already struggling with being able to lay infrastructure that we have already. Now we've got to worry about distributed resources and things like that. But I want to ask, John, you know, I think at the end of the line, a lot of times, it's very easy for us as sort of the larger community to sit in our ivory tower and not realize that sometimes these things don't happen because there's not installers in the field. Or you look at a rural area or spaces that are run by co-ops or munis, it's a labor challenge more than it is a want-to challenge. How do those worlds sort of come together, especially as you have this unprecedented demand for some of these new technologies?
It kind of starts with the interconnect queues. If you look at the demand for new interconnects onto the grid, a big part of that equation is, do you have the labor? Do you have the resources to be able to get those interconnects in place? It used to be a FIFO, first in, first out. Now it's like first to be able to complete based on what is available in the resource side will likely be at the first of the pile to get those interconnect queues in place.
Well, Jack, it's interesting because, you know, you talk about sort of all these use cases and applications, and to John's point, you know, coming from a FIFO standpoint where, hey, you've got to be able to lay this pipe. You need to be able to use it. We've got to be able to have these resources. At the end of the line, though, the problem still happens where somebody's got to dig that trench. And the largest threat to potentially our industry among a lot of other blue-collar industries is that in the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to have the largest mass exodus of talent that we've ever had. Retiring, people leaving the industry. And we can talk all day about all these incredible technologies that we have, services that we offer. But if there's not those folks at the end of the line that can go fix that power line, that can dig that trench, then we're going to have a problem. What is the scale of that problem, I think, maybe? And then what are some of the ways that you guys are already making steps to make that process easier for folks to recruit?
No, it's a really great observation. And I think there's a couple things to unpack here. So one, the demand for the product, right? So us as manufacturers, you know, there's a ton of demand, ton of backlog because we can see the needs coming. A lot of infrastructure, government aid coming in, Build America, Buy America, a lot of in-region, for-region, like to call it. So there's a lot of opportunity for manufacturers to supply to what the customers need, right? But to your point, Ben, the thing that I think is most interesting that's almost recession-proof and AI-proof, if you will, are these trade skills, right? Whether you're a lineman, whether you're an electrician, a plumber, a construction worker, even a manufacturing employee, none of this is going away. And what's really exciting to me is that it's also a really high-paying opportunity because when you have such a limited amount of people coming into that field, highly skilled, highly motivated folks that want to come in and take up these trades is what's really going to make a difference in the future. And I think about electricians especially, or EPCs, there's just not enough out there, right? And so you can have all the best products in the world. You have all the funding you need. But to your point, if there's no one there to lay the pipe or to install the wire or connect the grid together, you know, we're really going to be challenged in the future. So again, I would encourage anyone that is kind of on the fence of what they want to do, get into the trades. I mean, and ABB is really tied in with a lot of local communities. I think our team is meeting with emerging engineers and emerging talent out in the field. And we're really trying to foster that local chapters with like NECA or with IEC and try to really get in touch with those local trade communities, because we do think there's a big benefit to having trades. And ABB is really a big proponent of starting that early and bringing them in and finding a home for them.
Absolutely. Well, and John, I'll say this too. I had the chance to talk with you about this last year as well. You know, that challenge means a lot of different things to different people. But the cool thing about having all these new bodies come into the industry for the first time is it actually inspired how you design your products, because it makes them a little bit easier to trade on, makes them a little bit more user-friendly, makes that jump from, you know, somebody who lives in comms and fiber and 5G to say, hey, I have this skill set already. Let me learn how to use this in electrification. Talk a little bit about how that need and sort of that new workforce coming in is inspiring the design process, not only from a physical product standpoint, but even some of that software technology too.
Absolutely. So if you look at the early career professionals, folks that are getting ready to graduate from college, what excites them the most are like new digital types of solutions. And that's where we really shine, is working closely with the utility with digital solutions that addresses much of what Jack talked about. If you look at the amount of time it takes to just in the physical labor side of building a substation, if you move that to a digital substation, you drastically reduce, instead of tens of thousands of miles of twisted pair control cable, you're talking about, you know, single strands of fiber optic. You're talking about the ability to start up, commission, and test so much faster. And those are the things that our younger folks or our early career folks and folks coming out of college really do enjoy, is that digital aspect. At DistribuTech this year, I would say that we've seen more of an interest in the digital solutions, both from the utilities as well as the general market, just because they see the amount of savings in space, time, to get implemented. That's been fantastic.
Well, look, and Jack, you see it too. It's not just the workforce, right? It's nice to have these tools and actually make them operational, but it's a cost savings mechanism for the end user as well, right? What are some of the ways that some of these digital technologies are helping folks save money, drive value, whether it's through data automation or even empowering their workforce at the end of the line?
Yeah. Well, I think there's no surprise that we have a ton of data, right? We're collecting endless amounts of data all the time. But how do you analyze, implement, and utilize that data? And that's where I think the early career new generation of folks coming into the business, if they're willing to take a chance on manufacturing or maybe these older industries, can find a really good niche. Because if you're managing or monitoring your grid and you have it connected well and it has good monitoring on it, you can almost look at it anywhere in the world, right? And you get this ability to assess problems real time. And then how do you leverage AI and how you leverage the other tools to help predict, And I think that future is going to be predictive analysis for utilities, is how do I know when something's going to happen, and do I have the right tools in place to respond to that? And that's what I'm most excited about, too, is just how well we can connect our tools to enable our customers to make better decisions, and the data that they do have, analyzing it quickly to make that ultimate decision for their customers.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask, too, John, I remember 4 or 5 years ago, DistribuTech, you know, you saw for a lot of people the first time coming out with sort of AI solutions, and it felt a little bit separate, right? It was like, this is kind of fluffy and nice, and then you had, okay, where's the real part of the industry over here? You had these rival factions. But the reality is those perceived boundaries are gone now, right? You step on the show floor, you go to IEEE, you see all these different places. Now, if you're not using your data, if you're not creating these resources to create, or you're not using your resources to create value for you, you're just behind. But we still have some of those hangers on. What do you say to those people who are saying, man, you know what? I just, whether it's budget, whether it's time, resources, or maybe I'm just old and don't want to deal with it. What would you say to some of those folks?
I would say that, you know, again, the fear of being left behind is significant. And what we've encountered is even some of those folks that are late career that really love the old analog styles of protection and control are starting to embrace the new technologies. You see it in your daily life. You know, everyone has a cell phone. Everyone has a smartphone, it seems like. So their acceptance has also started to increase. So if you use the analogy to say, well, you're using digital in your daily life, why not at work? That starts to bridge that gap for those folks as well.
Well, look, John and Jack, this has been a great conversation. I want to give you each one last question. I'm going to ask you to pull your crystal ball out. In the next 10 to 15 years, good luck making official projections on this, but what are some of the things that you think will continue to impact the industry most? Is it the electrification of data centers? Is it the labor shortage? What are some of those things that you think will be the most impactful things for folks to focus on at the end of the line here the next 10 years?
I mean, data centers for sure, because the need for AI, the need for having this just gluttonous amount of data storage, not only just being able to generate the AI, but also being able to store the information is not going away. We're only in the beginning. And so to me, that is going to be a continual area that we got to look at. And again, I go back to it at the end of the day, but the grids have to upgrade, and we have to find ways to harden and get more resilient every day. And until we can solve those problems, we're going to still have challenges where some customers, especially in rural areas, feel like they're out of power too long, or they don't have quite enough demand coming in. But I think the future is very bright, especially in the utility business for us. We're here to support those customers, and then hopefully we can bring good solutions to the market.
Amazing. And then, John, same question to you. We'll let you land the plane.
Completely agree with Jack. If there's a way to figure out how to monetize AI, that's when you're going to really see the dramatic increase in the demand for AI. I would say that what I see is the demand for future flexibility from the end user, the consumer, as well as the utility to be able to provide that flexibility of power. We're going to continue to see significant immigration into the U.S. market. There's a lot of opportunity. People migration within the U.S. is also going to be significant as well. So again, having that flexibility is going to be important for us in the future.
Well, gentlemen, look, I appreciate you trying to take a bite out of this gigantic conversation with me today and sort of summarize it all in 25 minutes. But I'll tell you what, we've got to find a way to have you both back on, because I'd love to attack some of the things like rural power generation and transmission distribution, munis, co-ops, because that's sort of its own set of problems, right? It's a lot of ways its own separate conversation. But I'll tell you what, I appreciate you taking a couple minutes, stopping by today as you guys are in town. And thanks for having a great conversation.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.